we've learned anything from these past couple of years, my fellow Americans, it's that personal medical freedom and liberty are in crisis. America Out Loud Pulse brings together the top experts in healthcare-related fields to keep you a beat ahead.
Nothing in this act shall be construed to limit or interfere with the authority of a healthcare practitioner to prescribe or administer any legally marketed device or medicine to a patient for any condition or disease within a legitimate healthcare practitioner-patient relationship.
Wow. Where in the world did you get that?
That sentence, as well, I happen to be perusing through the FDA actual original legislation, as well as the updated legislation. The updated legislation actually was amended March 15th, 2022. I think that is actually pretty recent. But this section 1006 is still in the original purview of what the agency of the FDA is allowed to do. And it was just funny, Stuart, to find such a sentence and such a stark sentence that there's no question here. Nothing in this act. So again, that would mean literally, it doesn't matter how long this paper is. I think it's 871 pages of Federal Register. But you don't use the word nothing in this act should be construed. So nothing in this act says, no, nothing in this act, even if it says it, shouldn't even be construed to limit or interfere. Yet,
wow.
Yep. I would ask you, Stuart, what has been going on the last 2 years, and why have we even assumed that this authority existed?
Wow, what an introduction, Jordan. Thank you so much. I am Dr. Stuart Tankersley and Dr. Jordan Vaughn of Concerned Doctors, and we are welcoming you to this week's edition of America Out Loud Pulse. Thank you for joining us, and please tell your friends and family about our presentation on Tuesdays, as well as the other Monday through Friday nights of the week, and on podcasts that they can get throughout the week. But thank you for joining us. Jordan, what a home run. Thank you for bringing that to light. I think it plays right into the case that was brought and filed in federal court last Friday. That it goes to the heart of what we have been suffering through, not just the physicians and patients, but our country, just the overreach, once again, the abuse of our federal government through the FDA and the NIH and Dr. Fauci.
And in many ways, I think, Stuart, it goes back to the fact that a lot of us, I think there's been some history on how much actual documentation of laws there are. I think it would take your whole lifetime to probably read the Federal Register. But a lot of times what we know about our rights and what we know about these agencies' purview, a lot of times has to do with whether the leaders of these agencies know their limitations and what they're legally allowed to do. And I think in this case that was brought forth by some pretty Dr. Merrick is one of them, was to say, look, you have done something wrong, and not only is it wrong, but you actually had no legal authority to do what you do, and all of the authority that the FDA has comes from the representative government that gives it that authority. Now, the FDA, as the leader of an FDA, needs to know what the limitations are on their ability to do things. But in the last 2 years, it seems that they feel like they can do whatever they want.
Yes, so there's no doubt that the people in charge know their limitations that they legally have. And as we've seen in the last couple of decades, those in authority never are held to account. The Sussman trial this past week, in my opinion, is a classic example of that. But this thing is amazing in what it will allow for going forward. When Dr. Merrick and Dr. Bowden and several others, true heroes in my opinion, filed this lawsuit against the FDA, what the trickle-down effect will be, what will be the results of this case and further cases probably at the state level. What are your thoughts on that, Jordan?
So to me, the reality is the FDA acknowledges not only openly, but in their legislative purview, that they are not allowed to interfere with the practice of medicine. Now, the practice of medicine itself, in some ways, can be interfered with at the state level. But even that is a subject that we could discuss later on how active a state authority could be involving themselves between a doctor and a patient. Much like a lawyer and a client, there is a lot of what I would call flexibility and the ability for a patient and a physician to deem out a plan and use things, again, both of them acknowledging what they're using it for and the physician obviously informing the patient about what they're using it for. But the FDA doesn't have the authority to interfere there, but instead almost gave what I would call the protection of their statement to the state authorities to use to influence what physicians did in their state. And that's the problem, is the FDA, to begin with, didn't have the right to even state such things.
And what's important, link, I believe, is the fact that they continuously, the state, especially I know of it in Alabama and in hearing the news over the last 2 years, states like California and New York, they continuously quoted the FDA's statements. So they abdicated their responsibility.
Even though the FDA didn't have, and that's what we talked about last time is, again, you know, science is not a leader, it's an informer. Leaders lead. And so if a leader wants to do something, claim it and implement it and take the blame for it, but do not offset that blame or offset that explanation to a body that literally has no right to make that claim.
That's right. This is so important what this case is, these brave physicians have taken on. Can you imagine the amount of angst that not only being that we've dealt with in the outpatient setting, but like Dr. Merrick and others in the inpatient setting, not allowing them to treat the patients who have over, I remember Dr. Merrick's testimony in the Senate before a Senate hearing. He said, I had greater than a 50% higher survivability than these other physicians in my hospital. And then they fired me.
I will tell you, Dr. Merrick is the most published critical care physician in the world. And not only that, has credentials. And again, I'm not saying that credentials necessarily equate to competency, because we know that in terms of who currently is advising.
Yeah. That's right.
But if there's someone that wants to go against his credentials, God help you. But yeah, this man, again, I think because of his credentials and because of his outspoken nature, and actually to put himself really in harm's way from his ability to take care of patients and really from his own family and income, further proves that he believed and knew that what he was giving to his patients did nothing to hurt them. And 100% in his case, he knew it helped them. And that's what matters when a physician is giving you a treatment. There's two things. One, do I think this will help? And two, can it hurt? And that balance is what a physician does every day. And to remove that balance, and that balance is different for every person that we interact with in an exam room, to allow that balance to be decided by a nebulous, nondescript, foreign person, meaning foreign as in they live in Washington, not in your room or my room in Birmingham here, is completely against everything we stand for as physician. or the state capitol. It doesn't matter. Again, it is one thing to come out and say, look, there's a medicine that we have on the market that will kill people. My argument for that would be, okay, first of all, why do we have it on the market? Okay. Meaning if the safety is the issue, okay. And there have been times, again, FDA is not perfect. There have been times that the FDA has approved a medicine that needs to be removed from the market. But that is not the claim they are making here. The claim they are making is that they know better than the doctor in your exam room what is best for you.
And if you
and that's
come up
not
with
the FDA's purview.
Not only that, but the evidence showing its benefit, they reject. They reject the science. As you know, the with the case of ivermectin, over a dozen mechanisms of action away against the virus and the inflammation it causes. Yet, they refuse to use the science to the benefit of our patients and the public at large.
Yeah, and again, to me, their job, the FDA as well as the state medical board, is to avoid harm. And to me, harm is easily, in this case, from a drug standpoint, definable, meaning that we know that there are certain drugs that there needs to be what I would call closer observation. Heck, the FDA and the pharmaceutical industry, most recently with opioids, kind of actually looked the other way, which is so funny for something that did cause harm. They were absent, but for something that didn't, they were present and tweeting and on the news and talking about. It blows my mind that they were, so interested in something that might help versus not interested in something that definitely was hurting.
Well, we do know that there might have been an incentive, given that there is such cross-pollination. Corruption, maybe, I think would be an appropriate word, between the FDA and Big Pharma. It is clear that,
I think what we can realize is when you look at what the FDA's purview is, especially when it talks about safety, marketing, and indications, what they're designed to do is to hold pharma and the drug companies from basically advertising directly to consumers things that the drug companies have not proven. That is not the case when it comes to whether a physician, based on his expertise, based on observational data, actually sees that they work. I was actually reading through a law journal this evening. And did you know, Stuart, that 62% of all medications prescribed to children are off-label? 62%.
Wow. I knew it was large, but why?
Why is that? Yeah.
But the reason
doing a trial in children. Yeah.
That's right.
Doing a trial in children is expensive. It's difficult. And what we start to realize is once we have a safety profile after a drug's been on the market a while, we're able to infer from that safety profile whether a 100-pound 20-year-old and a 100-pound 15-year-old actually probably can take the same medicine with the same safety profile.
Well,
isn't that
right.
Interesting?
But the whole point is the reason they're used off-label is because in order to do a study on children, the bar is set very high, as it should be. Same with pregnant women or breastfeeding women. The bar is set very high, as it should be. Unfortunately, the world has changed in the last 2 years. And once again, we always say this, our profession owes our country a huge apology for allowing this to get out of hand, because we, the doctors, should have been the gatekeepers to this type of corruption, and we have turned a blind eye to the detriment of our country and our patients more specifically. But the level of approval for these FDA EUA vaccines, as they call them, is nowhere to be found. It is so minuscule compared to the potential danger these vaccines pose to our children and young ladies and pregnant women and breastfeeding women. Yet the standard has been completely ignored, it seems like.
Yes, it's almost as if the job, one job they had, which was to protect children and people not at risk from a biological injection that they had no need for, they failed on. But what they did do was stick their little foot in something that they had no purview on, that in the end hurt people and actually caused death to individuals that were unable to access it because of the denigration of a medicine that, through observational studies that were not only that, the meta-analysis of all the observational studies together sometimes, and we know this historically, is even better than actual what I would call placebo-controlled trials. We know that now. We know that observational data, when you actually apply statistical meta-analysis to it, we can actually infer better information and actually inform even the original trial, because trials are done under conditions that aren't real. I mean, by definition, a trial, as I think Dell Bigtree quotes, it usually the guys that take it are what we call the Supermans among us. It's the person with isn't taking any other medicine, has no issues, and has a perfect immune system. And I will tell you that very few of those people exist, and every one of those people, what they do all day is participate in drug trials. So again, when observational data comes along where we use it in the real world, we say, okay, now that's a better indication of, hey, this actually works. Or there might be a signal that says, hey, this might be causing myocarditis. We might want to remove it from recommendations in our pediatric population. I'm not talking about anything specific, but I think you can infer what I'm saying.
Right. It's absurd. It is just insane how we have gone away from what our original designs and purposes and responsibilities have been.
All right. Well, we will be back for our next segment. We will continue to talk about what is the FDA's purview, as well as how, I think smartly, these physicians are challenging what has been done in the last 2 years and very effectively doing it.
Because of COVID-19, many Americans worry about their health 4 times a day. That's 120 times per month. To minimize the worries, leading nutritional supplement company, Healthy Cell, created Immune Super Boost, an immune supplement that contains full effective doses of science-backed nutrients like vitamin C, zinc, elderberry, and echinacea, all in a one-a-day, pill-free, ultra-absorption ingestible gel. It tastes great, comes in a convenient squeeze gel pack, and it's more natural too, without chemical binders, fillers, and coatings. Supporting a strong and resilient immune system can be simple. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of Immune Super Boost. That's HealthyCell.com, HealthyCell, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
America Out Loud beats to the pulse of our nation. We know when you're angry, you're troubled, confused, glad, and thankful. We know you because we are you. Join us as we explore the most important issues of our time. We are America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
While many things we hear are lies, we know one thing is true. Viruses exist and people get sick. Look, there's no guaranteed way to keep from getting sick, but there is a way to reduce your chances. Cofix RX, the original povidone iodine-based antiviral nasal spray that you hear Dr. McCullough talking about, provides an additional, invisible layer of protection from colds, flu, coronaviruses, and more. Click the banner ad on AmericaOutloud.com and use promo code OUTLOUD for 20% off. Stay protected with Cofix RX.
Welcome back. And so this is Tuesday's edition. And what we have discussed in the first segment is we're going to dive in deeper on. It is a very important development that occurred on Friday with the filing of a federal suit against the FDA for their egregious oversteps. Once again, their abuse of their responsibility and roles. We're going to be diving into the case, and what this is going to do, like we discussed last week, is this is now going to put not only the physicians, the practice of medicine, under a microscope like we've been, and in my opinion, failed at the last 2 years, but we're about to enter into a microscope on Lady Justice. Is our judicial system capable of evaluating this tragedy that we are still stuck in? Are they capable of acting with authority and responsibility to help us decipher how to get out of these traps that have been created? And it's very unfortunate that it's gotten to this, but I've been waiting for it to happen for a year and a half now, and I'm super excited with this case, 37-page case against the FDA brought by wonderful, well-known physicians in the country. And so, Jordan, with that, we're welcoming people back to Tuesday's edition of America Out Loud Pulse, and I would like for you to read a segment from the FDA's, from the registry, National Registry of the FDA's authority.
So again, I think the beauty of this case was that they were restating not only what the FDA's purview was, but actually what the FDA, even as recent as May 6th of 2020, has stated in their regulatory guidelines. And one of those is that the FDA acknowledged that good medical practice and the best interest of the patient requires that physicians use legally available drugs, biologics, and devices according to their best knowledge and judgment. And Stuart, when I read that sentence, I don't see according to what the State Board of Medicine and the FDA tell them to. I see according to their, and I'm guessing that there is the physician, because there's no better way to state it, their knowledge and judgment. And I will again actually go ahead and read the next citation here, which is from the Council of Scientific Affairs of the American Medical Association. They agree that the prevalence and clinical importance of prescribing drugs for unlabeled uses are substantial, and the prescribing of FDA approved drugs for unlabeled use is often necessary for optimal patient care. So again, I guess, Stuart, what me and you were doing was good medical practice in the best interest of the patient, and we're doing it because it was necessary for optimal patient care. Is that what you were doing, or were you trying to give a generic medicine to somebody because they didn't need it?
Well, I want to start with saying I am not the smartest doctor around. Yet I have had, grace of the Lord, zero deaths out of several hundred patients who I've treated for COVID. Several hundred, zero deaths. I think I've had four hospitalizations and they were out within 3 days max. I'm not the smartest doctor in the room. All I did was take the responsibility that we have as physicians to learn about the disease, just as you have. You've treated probably 10 times as many, maybe 10 times as many. You and your wonderful clinics we've treated many, many thousands of patients, minimal deaths, yet we're wrong.
Minimal. And Stuart, what I would, first ask you is, I think a lot of people assume that, when we prescribe a medicine that's off-label, give me a little background on what you're doing when you do that. And I will first say that the assumption that I'm looking at veterinary medicine before I give it, that the FDA has basically in their tweets throughout the last year has implied, is completely in complete absolute, you know, just mockery of what me and you as physicians do to research and find out, you know, what the rest of the world's doing or other people are doing. I mean, is it without evidence that you prescribe this, Stuart?
Yeah, I'd have to back up a second and say, I have approached, unfortunately, I've been forced to. Well, it's my responsibility. So I've taken the responsibility, as have you and hundreds of other doctors, to dig into the data. It's like I've been deployed three times in the last 20 years, in the last 18 years in the military. And when you are deployed overseas, it is all in. You are really consumed. It is perpetual consumption of what is around the corner. What potentially am I dealing with? And I had to go into that mode 2.5 years ago, almost, or over 2 years ago, and I have stayed in it. And it's sad that we have had to do this because other physicians clearly refuse to take the responsibility of diving into the science for themselves, because I know the evidence as to why I give medicine, just as you, these wonderful doctors like Dr. McCullough and Dr. Corey and Dr. Merrick and Dr. Zelenko and Penny Hill, these wonderful
physicians. Yeah, and I would say that
they've given
this
guidance.
The more that I mean, I'm one of those guys that the first time a drug rep enters my building, I want to know the mechanism that they're proposing and how this works. And I would say, there's a lot of, I cannot prescribe a medicine if I do not understand. And this isn't, I mean, I'm not saying this has to be everybody, but I can't prescribe a medicine to somebody, legitimately explain why I'm giving it to them unless I know the mechanism at which it's working. And so that's an important
thing
for me. There's a lot of physicians.
It's basic.
But it's, you'd be surprised that how many people, you know, have their, you know, well, we use this for that. And it's like, well, how does it work? And the answer a lot of times isn't as, you know, forthcoming as you would think. So, you know,
right. So
I mean, there are some medicines that we don't exactly know. Yeah. I mean, there are even some antidepressant medicines that we have more what I would call
theoretical. Well, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but at least there's some theory. Okay, this is working on, you know, these different receptors in the brain. It's a little bit hard to prove that because the brain, obviously, we can't stick a needle in it and find out exactly in the human brain. But there's at least a proposed mechanism of action. But that's very important to me. And so, like you're saying, when you look for medicines, what you understand first is the disease process, and then you work backwards to say, what things do we have that intervene or change or, you know, adjust this disease process? So that's kind of what I always tell people is what we're trying to do is target really the, you know, what's the way that it does its damage and how does it get in and what medicines do I have to close doors or alter pathways to make sure that it doesn't do its damage. And that's kind of a layman's way of how I do it, but that's important.
And then the FDA, and the reason we're allowed to do that, or we have assumed the reasons we have allowed to do it in the past, is because the FDA was supposed to have been doing their due diligence to make sure they were safe and get out of the way. However, as this case clearly points out, they are not.
And I will say they are not out of the way on us using these medicines for repurposed use. But for some reason, they decided to just say, well, you know what? You don't need to do all the phase one stuff you need to do on a vaccine or what I would call a biologic for this thing, because so-and-so says so. And you're like, hold on. You have these rules for safety. You have these rules for, you know, looking at what we call phase one data, but you're not going to do it when you need to do it, when something's never been, you know, utilized in a public setting, it has never been utilized on a grand scale. That data needs to be, we need to have informed data before we make a decision. So that's another thing that I have is one of the reasons that I'm not an advocate for the vaccine is because the FDA didn't do their job.
Clearly.
They didn't do the basic science that was needed.
they not only didn't do
that, basic
their job,
science was done on the other.
Right. On the agents that we've been successfully using, we have done our due diligence, and people like Dr. Merrick. And that, remember, for a reminder for those who may not have heard us before, C19study.com, Charlie19study.com is a wonderful repository, daily updated repository site, website that anyone can go to and look up the evidence for the benefit or not of probably 30 or more agents, including vitamin D and other agents. But the fact is, the evidence is clear. And the FDA to have intervened intentionally and legally, in my opinion, corruptly and illegally, and that's what this case that we're going to be discussing is all about. They have clearly not understood their roles, and they've gotten away with it to the detriment of our country. And I am so excited to watch this case unfold and to listen more and more to how the evidence is presented by the FDA to try and justify what they have been doing and getting away with the complicity, clearly, in my opinion, of the state health boards, especially in a couple of states that I'm familiar with.
Yeah. And when we talk about drugs like ivermectin, you know, again, in the pharmaceutical realm, I mean, even some of the medicines that I use, even in my COVID-19 treatment, there are medicines that I have to be careful with. And again, make decisions on what's best for my patient based on their medical history. Ivermectin is a unique drug in terms of its safety. And that's the weirdest thing about them picking this medicine. I mean, this is a medicine that there's been 4 billion doses given since 1987. And in all honesty, that's the problem. Maybe the vaccine manufacturers are so envious because they would love to have given 4 billion vaccines, but they couldn't reach that number. But ivermectin has given 3.7 billion doses. And I will tell you that the reported side effects are minimal, and the reported deaths are not even, in all honesty, negligible. Used at a dose that is, yeah, I mean, you can't even quantify them. I mean, yeah. So again, we're talking about, I mean, a medicine that's basically one of the safest medicines that I've ever seen. I mean, when I look at the adverse reactions, I'm surprised sometimes to say there's got to be more stuff this interacts with. And it doesn't.
Right. And so the evidence, once again, is clear on all these agents, even including the ones that are FDA approved. And just as a side note, and we've mentioned this before, but remember, people, that if you have an agent that is proven to be of benefit and curative or very effective treatment, then all of the agents, including the vaccines, including remdesivir, that have EUA status can no longer be used. So that is that, in my opinion, and the money that is lost when they're not used is the reason why they did not want these agents to be approved and revealed for being so effective. But that's a side note. Sorry about that.
So interestingly enough, one other thing they point out in this legal case is there have been 25 deaths associated with ivermectin since 1992.
Out of 4
billion? By comparison, there's 3,918 deaths associated with Tylenol.
Hmm.
So,
by the way, I wonder if Tylenol is approved in children.
I think it is, and I'm pretty sure you don't even need to talk to one of us to use it.
Right. That's right. But
I mean,
I hope not. But I don't know if Tylenol has been FDA approved in the use of children. But what about other agents, other drugs? Do you know much about that, Jordan?
62%? In terms of what other agents have been? Yeah. So when you talk about, you know, the pediatric, literally what your pediatrician gives your kid, only about 38% of those drugs have ever been approved for what they're giving your kid, meaning 38% have FDA indications for what they're used for. Instead, 62% of what a pediatrician prescribes every day is off label.
Jordan,
so again, I fail to understand how a pediatrician could be anti something that's not FDA approved when over half their practice is based on using stuff that's not FDA approved for the indication.
And Jordan, as we always like to do, we like to quote the source of that information so that people that are not really buying into what our message has been, where did you get that data?
So I'm going to pull it up on the actual, so it was from the Seton Hall Law Journal, and they were actually quoting a American Association of Pediatric article on off-label usage, and were estimating it. So I would get the date and actually attach that, but it is actually from the American Academy of American Pediatrics or whatever Association of Pediatrics AAP. So
the Academy, right? Not the college. The college has been much more reasonable.
Yeah, the college.
The college pediatrician's been much more reasonable about this approach, but I wish they would come out with a stronger statement against the use of these vaccines. Carte blanche against the use of these vaccines, as they're called, in children. But this is the AAP. They're the organization 20 years ago who supported abortion rights. The Academy of Pediatricians. Can you imagine the Academy of Pediatricians supporting abortion rights?
Well, even now, we're questioning their use of. There are certain things that they're okay with on top of things using off-label, which we won't even discuss. But it's
to the destruction
kind of
the
crazy,
child.
Actually. So
yeah.
So it was off-label prescribing to children in the United States outpatient setting. It was in the Academy of Pediatrics Journal in 2009 by Alicia, the last name Alicia, TF, TF Alicia.
Oh, great. Thank you for that source. And when we come back after this commercial, we will be discussing the details of this case that were filed Friday by several heroic physicians in our country who have witnessed the abuse and felt the sting of it, of those who are seeking to, it's clear they're just not able to help the patients like those on our side of the fence, unfortunately. And for whatever reason, I think this case, this very important case, will help us distinguish why.
Here on America Out Loud, we emphasize optimal health, and air is the most essential element for life. The average person inhales over 35 pounds of air every day, yet we seldom think about how to rid the air of pathogens swiftly and safely when we need to. The Genesis Fogger Plus HOCL is the only way to quickly and naturally restore air to its optimal condition. Visit genesisfogger.com/outloud for a free ebook on everything you need to know about HOCL and receive a 15% discount on the Genesis Fogger with promo code OUTLOUD. With Genesis, you'll be ready for what's next.
While many things we hear are lies, we know one thing is true. Viruses exist and people get sick. Look, there's no guaranteed way to keep from getting sick, but there is a way to reduce your chances. Cofix RX, the original povidone iodine-based antiviral nasal spray that you hear Dr. McCullough talking about, provides an additional, invisible layer of protection from colds, flu, coronaviruses, and more. Click the banner ad on AmericaOutloud.com and use promo code OUTLOUD for 20% off. Stay protected with Cofix RX.
Stuart, one of the things that's really bothered me recently is the fact that the FDA, as draconian as they have been in regards to whether a medication we know is safe is able to be used by a physician that thinks it's the best interest of their patient, but how really absent they've been in forcing the pharmaceutical industry to really do the proper safety, toxicology, oncological, and all of the studies that are required for them to approve a new product. The other thing that finds it interesting is that the Xavier Becerra here, the reason that he continues to proclaim a health emergency is because at that point, the FDA's enforcement, their requirements are not as stringent. So again, what you have to realize is the FDA has been dictating what your doctor should be able to give you to treat a disease that you have, but it has not been involved in safety data and safety studies for what they're forcing in many states your kid to inject into their body. So again, this is the problem, is the FDA is not only not doing their job, but they're not they're doing their job that's not, I guess is a better way. They're doing a job they don't have and not doing the job they have.
Right. It's clear that any investigational agent, there has to be consent. The abuse, there can never be coercion. And the abuse that these companies and governments, state, local, federal governments have done and have participated in coercing anyone, whether it's unfortunately free drinks, winning a lottery, or in one state giving people access to brothels. The abuse is just rampant. And what is it going to take? My concern, the overarching concern is the people may have heard that this past week, the White House was trying to force through a measure in the WHO whereby each country's authority would be usurped. Would then be during a crisis like this, the WHO would be able to dictate policy for the whole world. And fortunately, there was a stand down of that. Unfortunately, the people in the White House and their supporters are now trying to go around through mechanisms.
And I will say, thankfully,
trying to get it passed.
The African countries.
Yes.
The African countries stood up and said, no, thank you. So it is interesting to me that a place that you would usually associate with lack of democratic and representative government, which is a lot of African countries, was the one that said, no, 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 we need to keep our sovereignty. Yet, what we would have usually associated with the democratic West, they were the ones that said, oh, yeah, you can have all our sovereignty. Yeah. If there is something that they declare as a public emergency, our laws, our rights, our constitution doesn't matter.
Yeah, and for the physicians for the people that are engaged, their livelihood is as a part of the medical industrial complex, not just physicians. But I would ask yourself, I would encourage you to ask yourself one question. We are dealing with a virus that has less than a 1% infectious fatality rate. And we are willing to relinquish our authority and our own freedoms to an international body that has been corrupt to the core for decades? Are you really that blinded to your side of the fence, to the actions of those on your side of the fence? Because that's what they're trying to do right now. And they've got 2 or 3 months before the next meeting where they can try and ram it through. Hopefully, there will be a time of consideration to ignore this whole charade.
Though I do agree on their implications for vaccination boosters and remdesivir, they actually are on the right side of history there, the WHO. It's sad that even in America, you would think that we were ahead of the game, but at least the WHO isn't trying to force vaccinate and boost children, and they're also not recommending remdesivir as a treatment. But, even a broken clock is right mm-hmm. twice a day. So yeah, maybe the right. WHO is just,
That's right. On that their track point, record is poor.
It's abysmal. And I will say the other thing is when you look at how a lot of these multilateral bodies work, what you have to understand is it is not commensurate with the size, scope, or what I would say is, you know, stockholder, meaning how much you pay into this group. Instead, the reason that we have a Tedros as our head of the WHO, which actually happens to be the first non-medical doctor to be the head of the WHO, he actually has a doctorate in philosophy, but it's he actually did his thesis on Marxism, which is a great thing to do. But and the reason is because every African country,
right? His connections to genocide in one country are clear.
And China, really China. Yeah. I mean, again, when you look at the Belt Road Initiative, a lot of these African countries, China, in a very smart way, has loaned a lot of money, a lot of resources to countries that need it. And in return, once those countries are unable to pay the debt that they have given them, the China requires, what does the mafia call it? What's the payment? I'm not a mafia guy, but you know, it's the they pay what we would call their allegiance fee, and part of that allegiance fee is voting for whoever China approves on these multilateral organizations. So again, the problem, don't get me wrong, Wilson and Roosevelt. I mean, it would be great if all these countries had the same ideals and the same understanding of civilization and human rights as we do, but they don't. And for us to basically, you know, mix with them in a way that causes us to relinquish our sovereignty and really our citizens' constitutional rights should be scarier than the world thinks it is.
Yeah, obviously people on the other side do not understand what they're dealing with. So we're evaluating the case that was filed on the 2nd. I'm sorry, I thought it was the 4th, but it was filed on June 2nd, last week, in the Southern District of Texas, Galveston Division. The number is 3:22-CV-184. And it is Drs. Apter, Bowden, and Merrick against the DHHS, FDA, Secretary of Health and Human Services, as well as Robert Califf as the Commissioner of Food and Drugs. They are the defendants. And these brave doctors, multiple doctors, lay out clearly. It is very interesting reading. There is no question. In my reading of this, I was familiar with 90% of it just because we've been living and breathing this for so in depth for so much the last 2+ years. But it might be very alarming to those who have been blinded for whatever reasons as to what has gone on. And I would encourage anybody to pull it up, read it for yourselves. If you are unfamiliar with this information, you need to ask yourself why. Why have I been blind to all these facts?
Yeah, I think the other thing that they do is instead of respond in a way, because we know the data, me and Stuart do. I mean, COVID-19 early treatment will tell you that.
We're not saying we're the science, though. But, we're not saying we're the science. Let's make that clear. We are not the science.
But the data the data is there to inform your physician to make a decision that he should be held accountable for. How about that? But they are targeting whether the FDA has this authority that they have overstepped. And I think that's a great way to, again, go at what is the law. And the law needs to be upheld. If you are anti-ivermectin, if you are anti some off-label prescription, that is that's your right. That's your ability. That's what you and your patient need to decide. And heck, you can probably talk to other healthcare professionals and doctors and try to convince them that you're right. But it is different for the governing body of safety, who should never interfere in the practice of medicine, to interfere in the practice of medicine. And that is the issue. And so we have to hold the FDA accountable for doing something that they expressly said they wouldn't do.
And the manner in which they did it sometimes, the mocking nature in which this supposedly serious agency and very important agency in what they're designed to do, they could not help themselves, which is even, which should be an alarming to any serious scientist. The mocking of others in a pandemic that differ with their view. They are an agency. They're not an independent group of people.
Yeah, I would say that the 149 on page 35, the FDA also cannot give medical advice about how approved drugs should be used off-label without specific statutory authority to do so. Congress has not given the FDA that power, reinforced by an explicit prohibition on limiting or interfering with the authority of a healthcare practitioner to prescribe or administer drugs for human use. So not only do they not have the authority, but it's literally like telling your kid, well, you know, it's one thing to, they should have known they shouldn't done it. No, no, no. It's very different when I have told them expressly that that very thing they're not allowed to do and they do it. Now, that is a very different harm. And I think that's where the legal case will be most effective.
Yeah.
Because it's one thing to hold somebody accountable, you know.
Right.
What do you think, Stuart?
I agree. I agree 100%. And I think that it's going to be, like I mentioned earlier, this is going to be we're going to see what the judicial system is made of. They've been wanting several times recently, but this one is clear. There is no equivocation. If you read the case, and they're using their own words, the legal requirements that the FDA has, the legal registry, it's clear. They have overstepped their bounds, and it has harmed people and killed people.
And even in this harm that it's caused to these three individuals, they're not asking for any reimbursement. If you look at the actual case, they're asking for attorney fees to be paid, which I think is reasonable. But what they're basically doing is asking the FDA to say that is not their ability. Guess what they're also not asking for, Stuart? They're not asking for the judge to say ivermectin works. Right. They're basically saying, keep your hands off the practice of medicine. And that's why you know these people are serious. You also know why it'll be difficult to throw this out, because they're not asking for unreasonable things.
Oh, of course not. And I said they are killing people. Their results end up in the deaths of unnecessary number of deaths. Peter McCullough and the international group of 51 physicians who wrote the first first paper in June of 20 on how to treat COVID outpatient early. They predict that 85% of the people that died from COVID should not have died from COVID in the world. That's an astounding statement.
Yeah.
And we keep playing the same game.
Yeah. It again goes back to what is, I guess in some ways, what is the practice of medicine? And the practice of medicine is an individual making a decision with your consent, with your informed consent about what is best for you. It is not some nebulous body. It is not some administrative agency. It is the treatment of a human from a human with data. And I think we have to return to that. And if we don't, we are at risk of really, as Peter McCullough says, losing, if health freedom is lost, all freedoms are probably also not far behind.
Amen. And I will sum up, I would like to read one paragraph, paragraph 137 in this wonderful case. This necessarily means that not only must an agency's decreed result be within the scope of its lawful authority, but the process by which it reaches that result must be logical and rational. More specifically, the agency must determine the relevant data and articulate a satisfactory explanation for its actions, including a rational connection between the facts found and the choice made. And he quotes a legal case for that. My question will be...
Yeah, and I think that's the important part is they denigrated something without... I mean, literally had nothing to do with what the medicine was used for. The fact that it was used in some other mammal. Yeah, they ignored the data, but instead also stated stuff that had nothing to do with the case. Meaning, you know, right. Whether something's useful in a human has nothing to do with whether a horse or cat or dog also take that medication.
Right. And so... what this means, I am very interested to know what it's going to end up resulting in at the state level with the abuses at the different states that have abused their authorities and interfered with the patient-physician relationship. What will be the result of that in each state that this has been actions in all these states? It's just going to be very interesting to see.
Yeah, because if it is proved that the FDA... Yeah, because if it is proved that the FDA had no right to say any of this, the state's defense that the FDA said it doesn't really hold much water, does it?
They should have known that. They should have known the FDA shouldn't have done that, and they should have done their own. They had the due diligence to look at the science. These are doctors on these boards. They had the responsibility.
They're people.
They had the responsibility. If they're going to take
that board.
They're
people that we have asked to lead us.
Right. If they're going to take, if they're going to,
they
put
are individuals that made the decision. Yeah, they are individuals that made the decisions.
Nobody made them get on that
the
board.
Health of. Exactly. No one did. So again, we are going to sign off this evening. It's been a great spirited discussion, and I am hopeful for this case. And actually, even talking right now, I mean, I think there's an option or ability for us to give an amicus brief in support of this, especially if it reaches the federal level, would be something that we would be doing on behalf of concerned doctors, because I think this is an important thing for really not only the doctors, but I will say the most important thing is as patients, you want all treatments available and you want your doctor to have the full shelf of options when they're dealing with the diseases that you face today or in the future. And so this is Dr. Jordan Vaughn and Dr. Stuart Tankersley signing off, and we will see you next week.